Okay, let's unpack this. Valentine's Day, 1970. Forget Rose's picture stepping off this like rattling cargo plane somewhere in Thailand.
Yeah, and not even being sure which base you're actually at until you're, you know, physically there.
Exactly. It's quite a start. Today's deep dive, we're going inside Nakhon Phanom Royal Thai Air Force Base NKP, seeing it through the eyes of Jack Pollard. He was an Air Force jet engine mechanic there.
We've been looking at his interview on the Military Tales YouTube channel. It's episode 49, specifically about his time at the 56th Equipment Maintenance Squadron at NKP.
And his account, it really gives you a feel for the, well, the day-to-day grind of keeping all these different aircraft flying in a war zone.
And NKP was absolutely critical, supporting this huge mix of planes and helicopters. You had CH-3s and the big H-853s for rescue.
Right, the Jolly Green Giants.
Exactly. Then the OV-10 Broncos doing reconnaissance, C-123 transports, and those C-119 gunships, the Shadow and Stinger gunships. Pollard's job was keeping them all going.
So our kind of mission here is to get into the nuts and bolts of that maintenance work, appreciate the ground crews, the unsung heroes, really, and see the lasting impact of that service all through Pollard's story.
That interview, it really puts you right there on the flight line. It's that crucial perspective from the guys making sure the missions could even happen.
Okay, so let's start at the beginning. Pollard, he actually enlists while he's still in high school, finishes tech school at Chanute Air Force Base,
which was a major training hub.
Right. And then bang, Valentine's Day, 1970, he's on a plane to Thailand. But all he has is this APO number. No idea where he's headed until he gets to Travis Air Force Base in California.
That APO system, it just highlights how different things were logistically, you know? The security, the sheer scale of moving people around without constant updates like we have now.
And the flight itself. A Braniff C-7 Caribou nicknamed Old Shaky. He asks where to sit.
Uh-huh.
And the flight engineer just tells him, jump on something that's chained down and hang on.
Wow. Okay, so not exactly business class?
Not even close. It really paints a picture of the, let's say, basic travel conditions sometimes.
Definitely a bit of rough and ready humor, maybe, in that kind of environment.
So he gets to NKP, reports to the 56th Combat Support Group, then gets assigned to the 56th Fuel Maintenance Squadron's Jet Engine Shop. Simple enough, right?
Sounds like it.
But then he gets to his living quarters, the hooch, and there are no beds.
No beds, just empty.
Empty. And then the phone rings. This buck sergeant, Daryl, answers, just says, no, then I ain't got one.
Uh-oh. Who was calling?
Turns out it was the first sergeant asking about the missing beds. Daryl just hangs up and suggests they all go to the movies.
Oh, you're kidding. What happened?
Well, the first sergeant wasn't amused. Pollard and the others ended up having to build their own beds. Daryl was not the most popular guy for a bit there.
Huh. Classic sort of military mix-up, but yeah, I bet they weren't thrilled. Builds character, I guess.
Or resentment. And before he even touches an engine, a tech sergeant gives him his toolbox, complete with two locks.
Two locks? Why?
The sergeant says, airman locks are to keep honest people honest.
Hmm. Says a lot about the environment, doesn't it? Trust, but verify with padlocks.
Pretty much. Now, okay, he's a jet engine mechanic, trained on F-100 fighter jets. So you'd think
he'd be working on jets.
That's what he thought. But nope. In Thailand, he ends up maintaining this whole mixed bag, CH-3 and HH-53 helicopters, OV-10 Broncos, C-123 transports, the C-119 gunships.
That really shows you something important, right? The need for adaptability. Your training gives you the foundation, but in the field, you work on what needs fixing, whatever it is.
Absolutely. And he volunteered for the flight line maintenance, specifically asked for the night shift, 6 p.m. to 6 a.m.
Makes sense. The planes are mostly back on the ground then, easier to access for the heavy maintenance.
Yeah, that was his logic. Imagine that flight line at night, though. All the activity under the lights.
Must have been intense, constant pressure.
He talked about these max effort days, mostly driven by SAR search and rescue missions.
Right. Trying to recover downed pilots or help ground troops in serious trouble. Those were absolutely critical.
And incredibly urgent. Pollard said if a SAR mission kicked off near the end of his shift, say 5 a.m., he wouldn't leave at 6. He'd stay.
Really? Until when?
Until he knew the outcome.
Yeah.
Whether the crew got back or well or not.
Yeah.
That's dedication.
Wow. That says a lot about the bond, the feeling of responsibility. It wasn't just fixing metal. It was about the people flying those machines.
Totally. He even saw some successful SAR returns. Said they'd sometimes break out champagne, even spray the returning helicopter with fire hoses in celebration.
A huge release of tension, I imagine.
Must have been. And he told us this great story about the squadron bar, the hole in the wall. Apparently, there's this rule. No hats inside. If you wore one, a red light flashed and an alarm went off.
Okay, a bit quirky.
So this one captain comes back from a successful, probably hairy mission, walks into the bar, keeps his hat on, the alarm blares. He just stood there grinning, letting it ring for like 15 minutes, buying drinks for everyone. Just pure relief and joy at being back safe.
That's brilliant. It captures that feeling, doesn't it? The little traditions, the immense relief after facing danger.
It really does. And Pollard, you know, he knew he wasn't flying the combat missions, but he felt his job was, quote, pretty darn important.
As he should.
His reasoning was simple. Without my skills, the plane didn't go. You really hear the pride in that.
And that's a perspective we absolutely need to remember. The ground crews, the maintainers, the armors, they were indispensable. The whole operation relies on them.
He mentioned a friend, Roger Youngblood, who flew A-1 Sky Raiders but started on C-123s. Youngblood apparently said he trusted his crew chief with his life every single day.
That trust, it had to be absolute. The pilots are literally putting their lives in the hands of the mechanics who prep their aircraft. It's a sacred bond, almost.
Pollard also talked about red ball work orders. That's when a plane is ready to go, but the pilot finds a last-minute issue, something critical.
Needs fixing now. High pressure.
Exactly. And he pointed out, often it was incredibly young mechanics, maybe 18, 19 years old, who were trusted to diagnose and fix these problems on multi-million dollar aircraft, right there on the spot.
The responsibility on those young shoulders, it's staggering when you think about it. It speaks volumes about their training and their character. One mistake could be catastrophic.
Definitely puts things in perspective.
Oh.
He did share a couple of really tough memories, too. One involved an F-105 fighter.
The Thunder Chief, yeah. What happened?
In flight emergency. Low oil pressure, bad engine vibration, and crucially, it had hung ordnance bombs that it wouldn't release.
Oh, that's a dangerous combination.
Very. It tried to make it back, but it crashed on the base, took out a guard tower, and tragically killed the TIE guard inside.
Oh, terrible. Even on the ground, the danger was real.
Yeah. And interestingly, for years, Pollard thought the pilot had died in the crash, too. He only found out later the pilot actually ejected safely.
Yeah.
Shows how information didn't always circulate, even about major incidents on base.
That disconnect again. Must have been jarring to learn the truth after believing something else for so long.
And then there's a really personal loss. His friend, Sergeant William Ripley, they called him Rip.
What happened to him?
Rip was a flight engineer on a CH-3 helicopter. They were just flying a routine mission, it seems, between NKP and another base. And they were shot down.
Oh, no. Just gone like that.
Yeah. Pollard said there was some initial confusion or maybe speculation about what they were doing, but ultimately it was confirmed they were shot down. He still goes to the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Wall to visit Rip's name.
That hits hard. Losing friends like that, it leaves a mark forever. Visiting the wall, it's a way to keep that connection, to honor the sacrifice.
He clearly meant a lot to him.
Yeah.
So after Vietnam, Pollard rotates back stateside, ends up at Langley Field in Virginia.
Okay, different pace probably. What was he working on there?
C-130s, the Hercules transport planes.
Yeah.
And he got to do a fair bit of travel on TDY's temporary duty assignments.
Ah, TDY's. Seeing the world, courtesy of Uncle Sam. Where you go?
All over, apparently. Germany, England, Alaska, Panama Canal Zone, the Azores, Spain.
Quite the list. Broadened his Air Force experience beyond Southeast Asia, for sure.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But his actual homecoming, back to his family, it sounds a bit flat.
How so?
Well, his mom had moved while he was gone to Bloomsburg, Pennsylvania. And when he finally got there, no one met him at the airport or the bus station. He just showed up.
Ouch. Not exactly the hero's welcome.
Apparently, his mom's reaction was just a very casual, oh, it's you.
Wow. That kind of disconnect we talked about. The world moved on, and sometimes the return feels jarringly normal, almost anticlimactic.
Seems like it. He actually wanted to stay in the Air Force. He even got offered a pretty hefty reenlistment bonus.
But he got out.
Yeah, his wife wasn't keen on staying in. So he transitioned to civilian life, tried a few things, construction.
Did he like that?
Hated it, apparently. Then managed a travel agency, did some tour bus work for Susquehanna Trailways.
Okay, trying different hats.
Yeah.
It can be a big adjustment, finding that post-military fit.
For sure. But eventually, he landed a long-term career. Law enforcement. He joined the police force at Bloomsburg State Teachers College, which became Bloomsburg University. Stayed there for many years.
That makes sense. The structure, the discipline, the service aspect. A lot of veterans find a good fit in law enforcement or similar fields.
He said exactly that. The military experience, the paramilitary structure, following orders, protocols, it all translated well. His wife used to joke about him going into cop mode.
Ah, I can picture that.
He raised a family, too. A son who became a school superintendent and a daughter in HR.
Sounds like he built a good life after his service.
Yeah, and he shared a funny story. His son almost got busted at an underage drinking party.
Oh, dear. By his dad.
No, but a family friend who was also a cop gave Pollard a heads up, so his son managed to avoid getting caught. Bit of a full circle moment there.
Small town connections. Good thing he had an inside source.
Right. So looking back, Pollard speaks highly of both military and law enforcement careers, calls them honorable professions. And he points out, you can have a full military career and then still have another whole career afterward.
That's a really positive perspective. He also, he touched on the differences between the services in Vietnam, right?
He did. He acknowledged that, generally speaking, the Air Force had better living conditions compared to maybe the Army or Marines slogging it out in the jungle. Yeah. Better barracks, maybe better food.
It's fair to acknowledge that. Different roles, different deployment realities. Not better or worse, just different experiences.
Yeah, he mentioned that friendly rivalry, the old joke about the Air Force building the golf course and swimming pool first, then the flight line.
A classic bit of inter-service ribbing.
But he quickly followed that up by saying, look, when things got really bad, when the SOG Green Berets were pinned down and needed emergency extraction,
the call went out for Air Force assets.
Exactly. The Prairie Fire call sign. That was the Air Force coming to the rescue. It kind of underlines their unique capabilities when it mattered most.
Absolutely. That Prairie Fire call, it meant everything to the guys on the ground needing help. Puts the jokes aside pretty quickly.
For sure. And he finished with real admiration for the A-1 Sky Raider, the SPAD, and especially the helicopter crews. Just immense respect for their courage.
Deservedly so. The A1s providing cover, the helicopter crews going into the hottest zones. Incredible bravery all around.
So wrapping up our deep dive on Jack Pollard's story, what we've really seen is this incredibly valuable glimpse into aircraft maintenance, that vital support role at NKP during the war.
Yeah, his account just highlights the dedication, the sheer technical skill, and that powerful camaraderie among the ground crews. Absolutely essential work.
And hopefully you listening now have a better feel for these unsung heroes, the guys keeping those complex machines flying under immense pressure. It wasn't just pilots in the sky.
Definitely not. It was a huge team effort, and the maintainers were the foundation.
So here's a thought to leave you with. Think about that level of trust. Pouring trust into these young mechanics, often barely out of their teens, fixing critical systems on billion-dollar aircraft where lives depended on their work. That's pretty staggering.
It really is.
What other vital support roles, maybe in different fields or different large operations, do you think tend to fly completely under the radar, just like these ground crews often did? Something to mull over.